Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd her career get there?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening. Hit that like button, leave a positive comment, or hit subscribe to get alerted when new episodes drop. All of this will help keep the project going. Thank you for your support and enjoy the episode. This is the Lauren Asghari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And my guest today is Tiffany Wandrow, who is the founder and, or I'm sorry, the owner and president of C&R Services based out of Nashville. Welcome, Tiffany.
Thank you, Lauren. I appreciate you having me on your podcast. I've listened to several of your podcasts now, and I just love where you're coming from and what you're trying to do.
Wonderful. I'm excited to hear more about your journey. And let's get started. I know that you're active in the community, active in networking. You were named a Nashville Business Journal Women of Influence president of, is it NAWIC? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
NAWIC.
NAWIC, which is a, talk a little bit about that, just in broad strokes, what that organization is.
So it stands for the National Association of Women in Construction, and we are a national organization that encompasses all women that are in some kind of aspect of construction. So you could be a designer, you could be an accountant, you can be what we call boots on the ground, which are the women that actually are in the field working, supervisors, foremen, people like that. And so our whole goal as NAWIC Women are to keep propelling women in construction and to give us education and opportunities to further ourselves in those careers. And I've been a member now for 4 years. I started out just as a member, but literally I'm one of those that as soon as I join something, I want to be involved in every aspect of it. And so when I joined, I was a member and I jumped onto the membership committee. And when I first joined 4 years ago, there was 45 of us approximately. And for the last 3 years in a row, I've run Recruiter of the Year. And now we're at 145 members.
Wow, what a growth. Well done.
Thank you. And during COVID, I mean, we did a lot of activities still and we lost some of those women, but they've come back and we're offering just great programs and opportunities to keep propelling women in construction. I love it. I have such a passion for it.
I'm excited to get more into it with you. So the sidebar, I guess, talking about construction, let's talk about C&R Services, your main bread and butter. Give a quick overview about what that business is, and then we'll kind of go back and talk about your journey.
That sounds great. Thank you. So C&R Services, we're a commercial painting company. And so my husband started this in 2001. It was a little side opportunity. He had a little painting gig. Was it property management and facility management? That was my gig. That's what my career was going to be. Was I eventually wanted to be an asset manager. I wanted to oversee these $60 million buildings that I was managing, but wanted to be in a deeper relationship with the owners than just managing the buildings. And he got an opportunity that he couldn't refuse and just started painting. And then he said to me one day, hey, I want to leave his career, which was maintenance technician on these buildings, and do this side thing. And I'm like, okay, I'm in it to win it, whatever you need me to do. And so I kept my career up for a few more years until I left full time to help him run this business that was supposed to be just a little hobby for him. And we took it from a hobby to multi-million dollar, 50 employees, multi-generational company.
Congratulations. That is no small feat. And I'm sure has its own unique set of challenges, which we'll get into.
Absolutely.
So let's give a little bit of context or a little bit of background on you. Where are you from? How'd you grow up? When you were a kid, what did you aspire to do, if anything, as you grew up? Give a little bit of background on you as your younger self.
Well, typically, as soon as I say where I'm from, most people are like, oh, that makes sense. So I'm originally from New Orleans, Louisiana.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, a lot. I get it now. And so I grew up in a very poor trailer park. My parents were self-employed landscapers. Parents did cleaning, landscaping, construction cleanup, anything that they could do. My dad was an alcoholic, so it was one of those situations when he worked hard. But that usually meant that once he worked for a week, then he wouldn't work for a month. But The amount of work that he would do would sustain us, but my mom was always working two and three jobs. And I saw what entrepreneurship meant in one way, the freedom to do what you want to do, when you want to do it, how you want to do it, and your scheduling. But it also, and you do determine your own fate when you're in control of your own destiny in that sense. But there was no consistency as far as pay. So with being landscapers in Louisiana during the summer months and fall, it was always great. But in the wintertime, it got really hard. And that's when we'd usually would move inside and they would do construction cleanup. Or my mom had this one lady that she took care of, her kids, her dog, her house. They were very wealthy. And I aspired to be that woman, having someone to help do all of those things. But I had a passion for animals and still do. And so I wanted to become a vet at one point. And that was what I really felt was my calling. I've saved everything from pelicans to turtles to dogs to cats. I mean, it was just what I love to do. And then I spent the summer as, I guess back then we called them kind of like candy stripers, volunteers. Mm-hmm. And so I volunteered at a local vet hospital right there in St. Rose is where I'm from. And I got to see all the good things about being a vet, but I also saw the sad things too, helping a family, you know, say goodbye to their loved one, their fur babies per se. And it just was something I wasn't going to be able to do. So instead, I joined the Marine Corps. So I became a vet in another kind of way.
And thank you for your service.
Thank you very much. And but realistically, you know, I come from a long line of alcoholics and drug abusers and all employed, you know, self-employed people. And so I wanted to break that cycle. And I knew that I had to get away from it. And I didn't want to go to college. I wasn't a traditional school person. I hated school, to be honest, but I loved the interaction with everyone, the social aspect of that. But I knew I needed to get out of that trailer park. I didn't want to end up like everyone would tell me I was going to end up barefoot and pregnant and drug addict. And so I wanted to prove everyone wrong. And so I joined the Marine Corps when I was 16, which, you know, it goes into a delayed entry program, but they basically start teaching you how to get ready for boot camp. And I had a great recruiter. His name was Sergeant Glassie. And he taught me all of the ropes and just basically said, you're about to begin your real life when you go into the Marine Corps. And so I graduated in 91, went straight into the Marine Corps. Actually, next week is my, oh my gosh, 38. I can't even count that high. It's been a long time since I've been in boot camp. But I graduated with honors from boot camp. I was the guide, as that is called. So I guided the platoon everywhere. I guided them through leadership. And I'm still in very good contact with 17 of the women from boot camp, still very close to them. And so from there, I just went to North Carolina. And then I became an admin back in 95, 94 timeframe. Women didn't have a whole lot of opportunities in the Marine Corps. We usually were admin or motor T or cooks, stuff like that. And so I was an admin and I got to work in the general's building, which I loved. I was a real pretty blonde hair, skinny Marine. And so they'd have my uniform kind of shortened on the bottom to show a little leg. But we, you know, listen, I understood my role. And I accepted it. It wasn't that I was like, no, that's sexist. I actually was like, I look really good in this uniform and they're proud to show me off. And so we had a lot of foreign dignitaries that would come to base and we would show them. We had special capability projects, for instance. So one time we had Australia, Germany, Deutschland. I mean, we had a lot of dignitaries and we had them at a picnic table. And they were all just eating. And then all of a sudden, helicopters showed up, Hueys showed up, and guys were jumping out of helicopters, fast roping down. And it was like they were being taken hostage. And so it happened so fast that they didn't even know what happened. Guys were jumping out the ground in ghillie suits, you know. And so they loved that kind of stuff. And that's what I helped plan, helped do retirement ceremonies, which we didn't have cell phones back then just to look up someone. I was legitimately digging through records, trying to find guys from Vietnam, those kind of time frames to help get them to these retirement ceremonies. So I loved doing that. It was such a cool thing to watch these people that otherwise had lost contact with, all of these people they had been in the war with or in served time with, to get to see them come back together would be really, it was very touching. So after North Carolina, I went to Okinawa for 1 year and got to spend time in Okinawa and went to Korea and Philippines and Australia. So I got to see the world and it was just at a great experience. I had married a guy I met in the Marine Corps. And so he and I traveled together and we divorced later. You know, they say we always marry our dad. So I married, of course, a guy that was not an alcoholic, but became one. And so at some point, you have to do what's best for you. And so I decided to leave him and start a different life. But I stayed here in Nashville. I didn't want to leave Nashville. And so I stayed here. And so that was about the year 2000 now. And that's when I met Jason. And he and I became a couple and got into this crazy relationship.
And how long have you been, you touched on this a little bit earlier with, and then I want to go back to a couple of things that you said there. How long have you been with CNR services?
So technically since the beginning, because I was in there, I was working all day as a property manager and going to school at night and helping raise Jason's baby at the time from another woman. And so, and then painting condos. So that's kind of what we were doing in the beginning. And so from the beginning, I was there, and at night I would help do estimates and invoicing. And so for several years, he kept on saying, you know, when are you going to quit working for the man and come work for the man? And finally, I said, when you say, how about you work with the man and not for the man? Right. And in true husband fashion, he said, baby, just tell me what to say. And I'm like, that's what you need to say. Come work with me. For you. And so we wound up we decided to have a son of our own together. And so in 2006, I had Riley. And so now I had Hayden and Riley, which was great because I'm definitely a boy mom and it was amazing. And so in 2008, I left my career full time to help run CNR full time.
Gotcha. Yeah. So let's go back. I want to unpack a couple of things that you touched on there. Let's start with the traveling, right? Being in the Marines, traveling. What's the thing that you notice most about, or that you learned most about from traveling, seeing different cultures, different meeting different people? What's like your main takeaway from that?
Well, growing up poor, I thought I was poor. And when I went to other countries and I saw their level of poverty, even our poorest people over here have things that we could never even imagine that other countries don't have. I mean, I remember walking down Tokyo, you know, one of their main drags, and you're looking at high rises and unbelievable architecture. And they had these, you know, what we would call a casino, but it's these pachinko. I think that's what they call pachinko machines, where these little balls are falling down. And there's all this rich around you. Literally one street over was a family living in a cardboard box with no food, no running water, like literally six people in a box. That is what it looked like to me. But that was the house for them. And so Korea, I mean, walking out in the streets and seeing some animals that I had never known people ate before. So when you go to the wet market, I feel like I'm doing this a lot.
I haven't noticed. You just did on the wet market, but I didn't notice before. And I was just on audio. She was doing air quote fingers.
My quote fingers. Yeah. So to me, it was just like being aware that what we consider to be poor is nothing compared to poor in other parts of the world. And so it helped me also have a passion for wanting to make sure that people are fed and people have clothes on their back. And because, you know, I didn't have that all the time. And they didn't have like food pantries like we have now. You had a church and you'd go to the church and ask for food. And that was sometimes how we ate. Or we had, you know, family members that would just do the best we could. I'm sure we were on food stamps and stuff like that. So it was me, my brother and sister. I'm the oldest, so I'm definitely the oldest. And all of the, you know, psychological things that they point out about being the oldest, my brother is definitely the middle child, and the youngest, my sister, is definitely the youngest. And so we had a lot of tough times growing up, but we were still good moments. You know, my dad was a drinker, and he would get very physically abusive. And so I'm a survivor of that situation. And unfortunately, he put me and my sister in some bad situations with men that did awful things to us, which is why we need to make sure we're protecting our little girls and boys out there. Some statistic the other day said, you know, one in seven boys will be molested, one in four girls will be. And so it's just different times, but not that different, because the same thing happened to me that's happening to girls and boys now. But my point of that is that the situation was a tough situation. And I say I don't like to let the mess of my life become the message of my life. And that was by, I had his name written down, was Pastor Dino Rizzo, mm-hmm. who is a North Carolina guy that married a Cajun girl. And so he's very like New Orleans when you hear him talk. He's just picked that up. But whenever I heard him say that, it was really just, it impacted me, because I think that that's one of the things we say a lot. You know, don't let our circumstances define who we are, what we become. And so my whole life, I guess I'd just been trying to break those stereotypes and those things that were told I was going to become. And becoming a business owner has afforded me to be able to do that in so many ways, locally in my community. But we do have an orphanage over in Mumas, Kenya, that we support solely, almost me and my husband. And so it's not just here that we try to impact people, but across the globe also.
Let me think how to ask this. Did you, when you were growing up, well, it's a two-part question. When you were growing up, what were some personality traits that you have that you remember about yourself that either you had or you developed that you've carried through with you and have served you in adulthood? And when you were being told by whoever that, you know, your life has been, will be on this path, or this is what you're destined to do, how did you get through that?
So I'll try to remember this, because I had a stroke and heart attack in December. And sometimes those two-part questions become a one-part. So don't let me forget the other part.
Gotcha.
The first part I would say is, what was the question again?
What traits for when you were little did you either learn or develop that you really carried through and have served you today?
I'm going to say, even then I was a leader. I wasn't great at sports, but I loved organizing the sports equipment. I loved making sure I was a caregiver also. So I think that whenever being an oldest sibling, but also knowing mom and dad were gone and I had to take care of the trailer and the food for my siblings and the pets and all of that. So I was always in a caregiver role, but also a leader. And I always loved being able to be in a leadership position, because if you're not a leader, you got, and there's, you know, lots of sayings that you can go back and forth, you know, like that there's leaders and then there's not leaders. You know, we need a little bit of both. I don't even know if the expression is still politically correct, but you can't have all Indians, you know, you got to have some chiefs, mm-hmm. right? And so I felt early on, I kind of was always a chief, not really bossy, but I had a way of getting people to do what I needed them to do, how I needed them to do it. And so I don't know if that came too from my mom being this entrepreneur and hiring people and watching her lead them or what, but it was just always something that was innately ingrained in me. And gotcha. the other part of that.
Yeah, when do you remember when people, you know, had a predestined path for you?
Yeah.
Did you believe that? How did you overcome that? Or did you just naturally block it out and determine that your life was going to be on a different path?
Definitely the last one. I definitely felt that I had a destiny that no one could understand, that all of these, let me preface this. I'm a Christian. I believe that the Bible tells us certain things, right? And so my beliefs are my beliefs. And I don't want to say I'm religious because I'm not religious, but I'm a Christian. And I believe that we go through certain things and that whenever we go through those things, that those things are going to be given back to us. And it's, they say that you get beauty from ashes. Okay. And so like that's, I have a phoenix on my chest because I have been through the ashes and I have been reborn numerous times. Okay. And so I think that if there's anything that where people would try to tell me, well, this is, oh, you're just going to end up like so-and-so, or you're going to end up like so-and-so. And I'd be like, no, I'm not. I'm already doing things to not be like that person. And so I think it was just, you know, kind of shutting that negativity down. Even now, like, I mean, even now we all have kind of, women especially, have imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And there's times that we don't deserve the goodness that we're getting. But girl, I believe I deserve it all. I'm just being honest because I came through so much muck and fire and ash that I do believe that the things that I'm being rewarded with nowadays are because I was so determined to change my situation into something positive. And even now when that negativity tries to creep in, I shut it down. And there's so many women out there that are great speakers. But there's a few that I know whenever they say, don't talk about my friend like that. And so I have to work. I do that sometimes whenever I start having that negative talk. I would never allow my best friend, Chrissy or Kathy, to talk that way to themselves or about anyone. Mm-hmm. So I quit talking about my friend that way. And so I kind of have a big ego because I feel like I've been through so much. I deserve, you know, I deserve the confidence. I deserve that to have the ability to tell other women, like, don't let what you've been through define you, because all it takes is just one thing to change the whole trajectory of your life.
Mm-hmm. I love that friend thing. I have two daughters and I say that to them. I'm big on just, especially with kids, just, and adults, by the way, but just confidence, right? Self-confidence and like making decisions and learning from mistakes. And anyway, but I'm big on that. Like, well, you wouldn't talk to your friend that way, so don't talk to yourself that way, right? Like I use that line quite often. Not quite often, but when my kids go there, you know, I use that. Let's kind of bounce around a little bit. But when we fast forward now to life that you have as a running a business, what are some of the best things about your job and some of the underbelly that people don't necessarily like to talk about?
Well, the underbelly is what I'm going to start with. The hardest part of being a business owner is the people. I mean, like, we say it all the time. We're just putting paint on walls. It's not difficult. It's getting the people to put the paint on the wall the proper way, right? But we're very fortunate. I mean, we do have a large Hispanic team that takes care of all of our projects. We have great foremen. We do profit sharing. We do a lot of things that help encourage people to stay with us as long as we can. But as you know, the average person stays 3 to 5 years now. And so you sit here and I'm investing in all of these young estimators and I'm teaching them everything we know. And just whenever they're going to be great, they're going to leave me. And so that's the hardest thing to accept as an owner. Two things. They're going to leave you. Without a doubt, if you're doing a great job at what you're supposed to be doing, they're going to leave you. Second of all, it is to not to understand that not everyone that comes in here is going to want to be a part of our life the way we want to be a part of theirs.
Everyone works for me. Yeah, elaborate on that a little bit.
Okay. So everyone that works for me, we know somehow. Like, they're our friends, they're our family. We've surrounded ourselves with people that we know and love. A, because we want to see them succeed. We want to see them make us. This world is about making money. And you can be as happy as you want in your job, but you can also be happy and make a lot of money. So we believe in paying our people very well. And that has led people to talk to other people that they know and love. And they're like, I love working at CNR. And then they're like, how can I work at CNR? Well, let me show you how. And so when I say we literally have hired, like Scott is one of my new estimators. We've known him for 30 years. He's probably one of the best salesmen I've ever met, but he bounced around a lot because would get bored with stuff because his salesmen do get bored. But we finally were like, listen, it's time to settle down. You're going to come in here. You're going to work for us. And this is going to be the last job you ever had. And he's like, okay. And so we sit down and we talk about those things up front because we're like, listen, yes, you're my best friend for 30 years, but when you're in here, you're Scott, my worker, my teammate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my son, he's 22. He started working here literally when he was 8 years old. He would ride around on Heelys in the warehouse, shaking our employees' hands, saying, I'm your future boss. So that kid has known from day one that he was going to own this company or run the company one day. But he would work during the summer, but during school time, he'd work at Sonic. What Sonic, he met Caleb, who was a college dropout, only had a few more credits to get his financial degree. And I call him, look, I'm doing the air quotes again. We dated for a year is what he said. Like we had coffee, we talked on the phone because I was so nervous about hiring someone to go after my money. Mm-hmm. And so there's one major piece of evidence advice I could give a business owner is don't chase the money. Hire someone to chase the money for you. Do what you do best, which is run the business, go get business, but don't chase the money.
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn that the hard way. So Hayden's like, Mom, you got to hire this guy, Caleb. I meet him. I knew I wanted to hire him, but I was so nervous. I finally pulled the trigger. We hired him and he just went on 4 years. But he came to the house one time for a July 4th party and he brought Zach. We love Zach. We hired Zach. He's one of my estimators. We interviewed him at the bowling alley. Like that's the kind of professional networking group we are, right? An owner is like, hey, let's go have an interview at the bowling alley before we start throwing, you know, balls. But
So people being a challenging part of the business or owning a business, running a business, but also being some of the good part of it. What's the best part about your job? The best part?
The best part about my job is making my own schedule. I'm not a morning person. I'm not one that rises, even in the Marine Corps. Like I dreaded every minute of it. I'm not saying I sleep in till 9 every day, but I could not stand whenever I knew I had to be at an office at 8 o'clock in the morning, right? I'm not sure where you're located, but in Nashville, it takes an hour to get everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of those things where if I can roll out of bed, get on the laptop, work for a few hours, and then come into the office and then go back home, I love being able to make my own schedule. And it's taken me quite a few years to perfect my calendar. But I had a great woman. Her name is Anna V, and she's with a company called Piccolo Marketing. And she's the one that taught me how to do time management with your calendar. So block scheduling. So my colors on my calendar are crazy, but I know what each one of those means. From I can look at my calendar at a glance and know if I'm out of office tomorrow having meetings or if I'm, you know, passing out treats for Halloween. I can just look at my calendar so easily. And so that is literally one of my favorite parts of this job is being able to make my own schedule.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not the right answer. I'm probably supposed to say something like contributing to the economy by blah, blah, blah.
No. You're supposed to say the truth. That's all you're supposed to say. You did it. You nailed it.
For me, sister.
So let's talk about the family business component, because I think it also might add some additional value for the audience. So you're part of a family business. How is it? Do you think that you do it well? What guidance or in your experience have been the things that work well with that and not? And now, see, I'm going on with my multiple part questions. I'm going to bring it back to it. So, and then when you're talking about your son, how do you avoid entitlement when it comes to working in the business? So I'm going to reframe them. So any tips that you have on family business, and then how do you avoid entitlement when you're looking at next generation?
All great stuff. And I get asked often about what it's like to live, work, play with my best friend, husband, soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
And to be quite honest, I mean, we're on 23 years right now. 22 years married, 23 years doing this crazy thing called life together.
Congratulations. And that is no small feat. Congratulations.
It is no small feat. And the one thing I tell people all the time is that there is no perfect book written out there on how, or even people that run centers for family owned businesses, they've all been in it and we all could give you different points of view. I've got several friends now that are divorced. Their companies, they bankrupted their companies or they got divorced. And so they split whatever, but those, so many that were working together as couples are, we jokingly say the fastest ship you can sink in a business is a relationship, because it changes everything, the dynamic, when you go from being embedded in the morning together and then you're at the office together, not agreeing on things. And then you're supposed to go home and eat dinner together when I'm still mad about this thing you said in a meeting. So we had to get past our egos. We had to get past a lot of lack of communication. And so now we overly communicate, I believe, because there's so many moments that they just kind of stop by and we talk about things. But then it's like, well, I told you about so-and-so. No, you did a drive-by, reminded me. No, you didn't tell me. So we really communicate a lot better about our expectations. We didn't do a DISC or any of those kind of personality tests. I believe in them, but I already know what my 20 years with my husband needs to be like, right? I know my son Hayden and what makes him tick. It's usually the other people, right? That you try to fill in these gaps. But I'm definitely one that believes in empowerment, enabling people to be successful and holding them accountable. I was micromanaged too many times. So I always said, I don't want to be that micromanager. And so I think that has a lot to do with it, is really communication, setting people up for truly knowing how you want to, what you expect and how, when, why, what, all that. Mm-hmm. My team knows when I say, hey, can you come here for a minute? They know that means we're fixing to do I call it the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know what I mean? So it's just simple. Tell me what's good right now. Tell me what's bad and tell me what's ugly. Mm-hmm. And how can I help you through that? So they love those meetings because I feel like they think they're getting a lot of just one-on-one time with me. And I do believe I bring a lot to the table for them, but they bring a lot to the table for me. And they have helped streamline processes and think outside of the box. And we have a lot of younger people working here. So for me, like whenever someone's like, hey, how do you blah, blah, blah? I'm like, well, hold on. They instantly go to YouTube or Google or whatever. And it's just, they're wired differently, how their brain works. And so I feel like we've got some good, more mature senior people that are here and then a lot of the younger people. So we kind of balance each other out too. But knowing that Hayden wanted to always work here helped lead us to where he's at now. So he started helping out in the field when he was just 15, out in the field, moving buckets, cleaning buckets. Like one of my foremen right now that's been here the whole time, he loves Hayden because he's seen Hayden get out and do it. He doesn't call him the boss's son. He calls him, that's my boy. He says, that's my boy. Because he's seen him do what it takes. And so he learned how to paint. And then after he learned how to paint, he came into the office and he's learned a lot of the office stuff. And now he's one of my estimators that helps put out bids every day. And he's excited because he's fixing to get his next commission check. That was something new. We were like, I know who's getting Christmas. I'm like, you better. it's one of those things where Jason and I would go home at night and you could tell if we had had a bad day because the intimacy, like not even holding hands, not even looking at each other. And that's whatever, we got business life coaches that would help us.
Mm-hmm.
Because, there's times whenever you're asking people around you how to handle things and they're all biased because they love you or they love Jason. So they're going to either defend Jason or defend you. There are times when you have to think someone on the outside needs to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And so we hired people at different times to help us through different aspects of our lives. If it was something major going on with Hayden, because I'm not his biological mother, we had a lot of things with his biological mother happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so at one point we were all in counseling. I think talk therapy is something we all need. So we've done that off and on, and you can't be too proud to ask for help. And there's moments whenever you're sitting here and you're just letting all of these emotions out. And then they see that. But then again, that gives them permission to let all of their emotions out also. And so it's nice to have a mediator that has been there numerous times for us. And you do it for a while, then you don't need it because things are good and you put the systems in place. Mm-hmm. But my goal one day is to write, like, what is that? Whatever for dummies. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah. Blank. Yeah.
Painting for dummies. Oh, there they go again. Air quotes. But my goal one day would be able to write some kind of just simple help book or something that would be able to help other companies that are family driven and based. So to protect themselves, you know, you need to have contracts. You need to have expectations. Everyone needs to know their role mm-hmm. in the leadership. But I think most importantly, it's getting everything that you can imagine out in the open up front and just don't like, what do they say? Don't sleep on it. Don't go to bed on it. Mm-hmm. Like, deal with it and hash it out. Don't leave angry.
What would you, I'm jumping around here a bit. What along the way in your career, what has been something, and you can name the person or you can just name what you learned from them. You mentioned one or two earlier, but just want to give the floor in case there's something else that comes to mind. What's something in your career that did you have mentors along the way? And what's something that sticks out to you as something you've learned?
I think we all have what we would call now mentors, but I didn't probably call them that then. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Sure.
There was a lady that I worked at one of my first commercial real estate jobs, and I respected her so much, and I still respect her to this day. Her name is Linda Martin, and she retired a few years ago, but she had very much a way of separating herself from all of the, she wasn't personal with people. Like, she was your boss. She made sure you were taken care of. She led you in the right way. But she also just felt like she had a wall, whereas I have no walls. I have, like, people, my landscapers were over for dinner, my janitors, we had Christmas parties, you know, like, these were people that made me successful. And so I didn't have walls to separate us. If anything, those were my allies, and I needed them as much as possible. Because if Linda called me and said, hey, the owners are coming in, your flowers look like garbage, I'm like, I don't have any money in the budget, but I could call them up and go, hey, the owners are coming. They'd come change out flowers for the relationship.
Uh-huh.
And so I jokingly told her many years ago that I learned all the right ways to be a boss and all the wrong ways to not be the boss. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'll take that. I'll take that any day. And so, you know, she was amazing. And I remember when I first moved here and I got out of the Marine Corps, and I had worked as an admin at another company beforehand, before I found this opportunity. And I remember she called me in the office one day and she said, hey, you got to quit killing your clients. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I'm killing them with kindness? And she goes, no, you keep asking them things. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? She goes, you're asking them. She goes, you're like asking them, not asking them. She goes, so I need you to work on how you pronunciate your words. And I'm like, what? I'm like, this is my slang. Like, you're pretty much telling me to take who I am. She goes, no, I'm not. She said, what I'm telling you is to know your audience. And if you walk into one of the doctor's offices in your building and you speak that way to them, they're going to treat you differently. She's like, so you got to be like a caterpillar. Or actually, you know what? She used this scenario, a chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
She said, because a chameleon is always a chameleon. But when he goes on this leaf, he may be green. He goes on this tree, he may be brown. He's still the chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so true, because I know when I'm standing in front of my NAWIC sisters, I can talk a certain way. When I go speak to veterans, I can speak a different way.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk to the Girl Scout troop, I got to speak a whole different way. So she really did help me understand that just because I may speak more properly, that doesn't change who I am.
So I love that. I want to double click in, maybe is the phrase to that, because I think that is, I think that's so true. And it's, you know, it's like, you don't have to give up any of who, to your point, any of who you are authentically you, but you're going to talk, you know, it's like when I go have dinner with my parents, I'm talking differently than maybe when I'm, I don't know, having dinner with a girlfriend of mine, right? Or my husband, right? It's still me. The tone, the messaging is the same, but there's nuances in how you communicate. So to think or assume that that wouldn't be the same in work, you know, I think sometimes people might take that too far to the extreme. Like, I'm not accepted for who I am, when it is really just a little bit more of like, you know, tailoring it to your audience to get the outcome or results that you're also looking for. So I think that's a really good, really good point and really good piece of guidance.
Thank you. She really was. And she really helped me propel my career into property management and know that that's what I wanted to do for a long time. Mm-hmm. Unbeknownst to me, you know, going to start a painting company.
Right.
What? Oh, they hired us. That was a great thing. All the people that I worked for or worked with later became my clients.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. How do you talk about, I think about that all the time, and relationships and building relationships and giving without anticipating anything back. But there is something to be said for business karma. I believe in that. What do you think?
I do believe in that. I can tell you that there's been many opportunities where we've had clients say to us, I have no money to do this, but I need to do something. Can you help me out on this? And I promise you, I'll help you in the future. And it's all come full circle. I do believe that when we give, that we're going to get, you know, rewarded in all kind of ways that we can't even imagine. And so I think when you give really without thinking about it, that's whenever it truly is giving. Mm-hmm. And so I've had a lot of clients, you know, come and go because, you know, maybe the relationship was a certain way for a long time. Maybe they changed their business, or maybe we changed our business. When we first started doing this, so many of our clients were property managers and facility managers, because that was my audience. That's who I was with all the time. And then the general contractors that took care of me, those are the people I sought after and was like, hey, can you give my husband a shot at this painting thing? I sent out an email to all of my female peers, all of my contacts, and said, hey, I'm going to do this weird thing, like own a company with my husband. And they were like, girl, bless your heart. Good luck. Hope y'all make it. By the way, can you come paint this? And that's all I needed, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it came full circle. But I think it also leads to the point that you have to know when you don't want to work with a client anymore. And if there's another thing I could tell people out there, it's okay to walk away from client relationships. Sometimes it just monetarily doesn't make sense anymore. Sometimes the relationship has just changed so much because maybe, like I said, they've changed their wants or needs or whatever, or we've changed. And so we've shifted from where we used to be like 80% property managers and facility managers to 20% GCs. Now it's the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
It's also real different in my world too, because there's so many property managers. There's one here in town. I swear, I think they have 100 property managers. But for me to try to get FaceTime with them is so hard. Versus if I get one general contractor and they have 4 estimators, I'm in their system. You know what I mean? Like they can just look up, oh, a painter. Oh, CNR. That's right. Tiffany. Okay. And so, I think a lot of that has just changed in the way of how we do business. We use a lot of platforms now, but I still go to breakfast, lunch, happy hours, coffee. I still think that is very important to do. Every day you need to have something scheduled with somebody.
You're still hustling.
We'll preface this though. When I had my stroke and heart attack in December, I had already been saying for probably 2 years, girl, you need to slow down. You need to lose weight. You need to exercise and you need mental breaks. I've been saying that for a while, but I didn't do any of that. And so truly what happened to me in December was a wake up call. It was a second chance. And so I've been on I could not feel the right side of my body. So I had to go through 3 months of physical therapy, cognitive therapy, and which I'm completely healed. I have nothing other than my right pinky toe is still numb. Other than that, but I turned 50 in June and I'm like, you know, it's like I got a reboot. And so I've lost 50 pounds, 50 for 50. I've lost 50 pounds.
Congratulations and good for you.
Thank you. Well, that is fantastic. Thank you. But mostly out of all of that, Lauren, to be honest, I think this whole work-life balance is such BS. Okay. There is no work-life balance. You're either in work or you're in life. I like to say it's more of a sway, right? Mm-hmm. We sway into work mode. We sway into life mode. And so if there's anything I keep telling my younger generation of women that I'm dealing with, and I have guys too, I coach, I'm like, listen, this whole work-life balance is such a false sense of trying to achieve something you're never going to achieve. It is all about balance. So if you know that you've got 4 hours in the office and you want to have 2 hours here and all, it truly is about knowing how to sway in and out like a pendulum versus trying to have a balance, because that's just not realistic.
Mm-hmm. I see it very similarly. I use the term integration, work-life integration versus balance, because it just alludes that there's some tipping scale to it. And I've also found that it doesn't, you know, not beating yourself up about it. So I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a friend, I'm a daughter, I'm an aunt, right? I'm all these different things. And an employer. And not beating myself and operating with best intent in every one of those relationships every single day, but not beating myself up if I feel like, oh, I'm dropping the ball a little bit here, right? Here being whatever bucket that is, then just adjust a little bit. Tied to your point about the swaying and getting it, trying to get into a rhythm about it. But I think in my experience, old Lauren would have beaten herself up a lot about feeling like she's disappointing or letting somebody down. And at some point it just became too much. And I was like, who's the judge of that? Like, I'm the one that's judging myself on that. So give yourself a break. So I love that you touched on that.
We are our harshest critics.
Mm-hmm.
We look in the mirror at ourselves and we're like, oh, these are all the things done wrong. You know, we see a picture of ourselves, or we see emails. Oh, I can't get ahead of my 117 emails, you know, or I'm not 4 things off my list and I had 10 things. But my husband says it all the time when he tells our team, like when they express that they're overwhelmed, and he'll say, it's not going to change. It's not going to change unless you change how you're looking at this. He says to them, if the estimating request slows down, that means you're not going to have a job. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If we're not getting these projects because you don't have time to follow up on the projects, you're not going to have a job. Like, being busy is the state of what we need to be in. But it's how do you manage that integration?
Yeah, yeah.
Life integration. And I'll tell you this. We leave, and on Sundays, our team goes kayaking together. Saturdays, they go golfing together. We go to concerts together. And what I was going to tell you earlier, I was alluding to, is it's okay as an owner to have that involvement with people's lives. We all went to one of my guys' wedding just recently. We were all there. And they're going to be the ones that want you all in. They want you to know about their kids, their family, their future, their life. And then they're the ones that are going to walk in, want to sit down at their desk, do their work, and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the hard things for me, Lauren, was to go, why doesn't so-and-so want to know what we're doing this weekend? Why isn't so-and-so come do these things with us? I took it personally. But the reality is that to him, I'm a job, right? Because
mm-hmm.
he's only staying here 3 to 5 years, maybe.
Right.
He's going to learn what he can. He's going to get out of here whenever he has the opportunity. He's going to work so hard for me while he's here, but he doesn't want all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn how to accept that as a woman and as a boss.
Well, yeah. And I think it's really important to also, I a similar experience, and I share that with you. And I think it's also important to what I've learned is that's okay, right? And that is the exchange. And while somebody is here, you treat them, or my approach at least, you treat them as well as you can, because, like, you know, work doesn't have to be overly intense, or I mean, not intense is the wrong word, but it can be fun. That's what I mean to say, right? Or it can be.
And I remind my team, like, we're together more than we're with our family.
Mm-hmm. Like, might as well make it pleasant.
Might as well make a
right.
Everyone in our office, they all say how much they love our office environment, because you would think you were walking into someone's house. Like, we have a dining table. We have a kitchen that looks like in your kitchen. You know, I've got all kind of like fun home stuff around. It's not like posters of a guy with a vault trying to vault over to talk about success. You know, it's worse that says we paint the town. You know what I mean? Like, and just recently I had some neon signs put up because it's just fun, you know, and that's what I want. I'm like, it's bad enough we all can't win the lottery and we got to actually work, right? But if we're going to work, let's have fun at it.
Yep. I'm with you. And you know, it's funny. I joke about this all the time. My husband jokes about this with me. Like, even if I won the lottery, I feel like I would still work because like I enjoy it.
I enjoy it. I love it so much. And I love my people. When I tell my people, there's times that they'll leave at the end of the day and it just comes out and I may get sued one day for it. I don't know. But I really say, love you. See you tomorrow. It just comes out that way. Now, of course, Scott, of course, I should say that to him. I've known him for 30 years and two wives with him, right? And so he's been through a lot with us and my son. But Zach leaves. He's like, all right, Tiff, see ya. Love you, girl. Bye. You know what I mean? So you do want to make the best of it. And you do want to enjoy the people that you're with the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too, because as a business owner, and obviously there's all just like there's different types of employees, there's different types of owners and management and all different types of things. But there is, it's funny, like when I think about the people that work with, not for me, with me, right?
Yeah, right.
I legitimately do care that they are happy, that they're accomplishing what they want to accomplish personally and professionally versus just, you know, come in and work for me. It's like, no, like you have aspirations, you have things that you want to do. Let's talk about those. Let's see how we can together help you accomplish those. That also helps accomplish driving the business forward for what we need. So I'm with you on that overlapping.
I think that it also means that there's a shift in how we take care of those team members. You know, like we have dogs. Everyone brings a dog in a certain day. Like Caleb will bring Chip in. Chris brings Wilder in. You know, like I used to bring Buddy. You know, like there's all these dogs we would bring in. And then you have, so like that makes people happy. Some people don't even care really about a pay raise, but they want more time off. Like, give me more time off, you know? And then the whole thing now is, you know, this remote work and stuff like that. We've tried it. We've had just difficulty with it, you know, but it's tough when you're a small business to remote because you are so used to seeing literally everyone in the office every day. So my husband still is that old school, like he believes you got to be behind the desk mm-hmm. or see you running around working to know you're working, right? I'm not like that. I believe it's going to evidence.
It's going to show.
It's going to show.
It's going to show.
It's going to show. But, you know, we have been burned in the past. We had some people leave us that went and started a competitive painting company. And so I think that, you know, that's that whole the competition sharpens the sword. You know, I mean, that's going to happen. You're going to. It doesn't matter what business you're in. Bad things are going to happen. It's going to happen. But it's how do you get through it? Your definition of insanity, same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Like, I'm not insane anymore. I know these things are going to happen. How are we going to face it? And we really try to be a little bit more pro. I hate being reactive. I want to be more proactive. And so we sit down as a team and we talk about, you know, which I know a lot of companies do that. A lot of companies sit down and try to forecast and try to talk about things. So I think that that's very important because I think when owners get so outside of ownership that's all they're focusing on all the time and forgetting who's doing it for you every day and you need to be in their meeting. You know, Jason and I go out in the field and we see our team out in the field and we check on. I mean, I have to have my Google Translate most of the time, but they see us and they know that we're there. Mm-hmm. We're not just some image or some figurehead. They know that we're out there. And so I think that is important, too, is just not losing grasp with the fact that, you know, your people are your people. It's going to be, but you're going to have things that go wrong. And how do you handle it?
It's funny. My I used to get teased is the wrong word, but people would kind of give me a little bit of crap about like, oh, Lauren, you think you can control everything? And I would say, no. You can control how you respond do everything. That is well within your control.
That is so true. So true.
So I want to ask one more. I want to be mindful of your time. I want to ask one more question here and then get to rapid fire. Before I get to my last question, is there anything that you want to touch on that we have not yet talked about?
You know, I think it's important just to constantly keep reminding the generation now that's coming out that college universities are not something that you have to do. I'm not against it. I think it's great if that's your passion. I'm pretty sure if you want to be a physical therapist, you have to go do those kind of things, right? But if there are any opportunities for you to not always look at a university or college coming out with 200 grand of debt that you're going to take 30 years to pay off, like really start looking at the trades. We don't all need to sit behind a desk every day. And maybe it's not being a painter. Maybe it's a landscaper or maybe it's a mason. We're losing our trades faster than anything that is happening in the United States. And so, we used to be proud as a mason, or we used to be proud as someone that constructed things, and we would pass that on to the next generation. I live in Robertson County, so it's a lot of tobacco farmland. Well, cigarette smoking is the lowest it's ever been in our country ever. And so those tobacco farmers are either selling their land and putting houses up or converting them to other things, hemp farms, and then maybe the other kind of farm at some point. But the reality is that where they used to pass this down generation to generation, it was a proud moment for the dad or the grandfather or the grandmother to pass these things down. And we're not seeing that anymore. It's now more or less, well, I broke my back doing what I'm doing. I want my kid not to do that. So I think we've lost a sense of pride in our society also by working with our hands or helping the next generation know that college doesn't always have to be the only outcome. It doesn't always have to be military either. I wish all of our men and women served in some capacity just to bring back pride to serve the country. But I think that we just need to remind that this next generation that's coming out of school, like there's so many other alternatives than just going to college. And there's hundreds of trades you can choose from. Some of them even pay for you to go to trade school, but you can walk out making $60,000 a year as a welder.
I was literally having this conversation with a girlfriend of mine maybe a week or so ago. But just tied to that, my hypothesis is that we are going to see an uptick in trades because they're going away, comma, they pay well, and we need more of them, right? I mean, who doesn't need a good plumber, a good electrician, a good, we have a historic house, we have to have our windows redone, right? For you to find somebody to do that is hard to do. So anyway, I'm echoing what you're saying, but go ahead. You were talking about welding and women in welding maybe is where you were going.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say how, you know, that is a field that was very, very uncommon. I think the first time we ever saw a woman welder was, what was it? Flashdance?
I never actually saw that movie, but yes.
Of course you didn't. You're probably only 22, but you know, she was a welder. And back then, to think of a woman in a trade like that, now to me, I'm like, who isn't in a trade that's a woman? We can be in any trade we want. But there are a lot of companies out there, general contractors, the trades people that are really pushing for trade people and making this generation, like we're not even high school. We're going into elementary and middle schools and starting to show them about trades. And helping them understand maybe college isn't for you. Maybe the traditional learning isn't for you. There's all of these things. And guess what we're using? VR sets.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to put on this headset that they're normally used to playing games with. Do you know that the brain absorbs like 72% when you use a VR versus traditional learning of like 46? I probably just made those numbers up. I'm just saying.
We won't fact check it, but whoever listens, fact check it. But
some high number of how the brain keeps it. And I think that that's going to be another thing that's going to start happening. There's a company called Promising People. They were hired by an electrical company to come in and take their greenies. So greenies are electricians just right out of school, right? It would take them 15 months to go from school to being in the field making the company money. They now hired this VR headset company to design the program from safety. It's like 84 lessons that they have to learn. And they're in the field in 8 months, making that company money, lower, if not no safety concerns. They put less wear and tear on the equipment. Like, they don't waste as much because they're learning how to do everything in the VR. And it's unbelievable. And I think that that's where a lot of the future training is going to go. We're not going to actually have to have waste trying to teach people how to use products because you just do it all in a VR headset. Mm-hmm. So we're going into these schools starting to show these kids at an early age because they're starting to show that by like sixth and seventh grade, they already know what they're going to do. Crazy. Mm,
that is crazy. That is crazy.
There's my instruction.
What is, before I get to my last question, what is the best way that people can get in touch with you, learn more about you, learn more about your company? Where can people find you?
Well, I'm on every social media outlet there is, but LinkedIn, of course, is the professional Facebook, right? But I'm on Instagram, but C&R. That's the thing. You can't put the ampersand in everything, but you can in some stuff. But C&R services, it's really easy to identify me. I've got the little paintbrush, the roller. You can't miss me. It looks like we're painting Nashville, rolling it out. And I'm here for anything. Like, if there's women out there, men out there, I love girl dads, because the majority of the men that are sitting in the audience asking questions, I know immediately when they're a girl dad, because they're asking questions on how they can help propel their daughter in construction or teach them confidence. And that's, so I love my girl dads. I love my girl moms too. You know what I mean? But there's something about when we have that paternal support on the dad's support, paternal support. And so we're seeing a lot of very positive growth in that sense. It's no longer like you need to go be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever. It's, oh, you want to be a welder? Oh, you want to go become a painter? Okay, cool. Here's how you do it. So I have so many connections. If anyone's looking for any kind of connection, just hit me up. But Tiffany@CNRServicesInc.com is my email. My phone number, 615-416-5784. Text me. Don't leave me a voicemail.
I'm with you on that. All right.
My voicemail said, hang up and text me.
My final question before I get to rapid fire. Rapid fire is unrelated to anything we talked about. But my final question for you before that, how do you define success?
Lauren, that was not in the pre-question air. Honestly, so as an entrepreneur, and you know this, people ask me, what's it like being an entrepreneur? I'm like, you work from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. And even in your sleep, you're still working. I wake up and I make notes on the side of my pad constantly in the middle of the night. I think success to me is when you can, because you've surrounded yourself with great people within your company, when you can literally leave for 3 days and not have to check your emails and not have to check your phone, and you can unclog and unwind, I believe that that is one way to be successful and to make sure that other people know when you're not in here and you're away, I want you to be away.
Wonderful. Wonderful. All right. These are rapid fire questions to close us out, unrelated to anything we've talked about. Here we go. Well, don't be too excited, but here we go. Grass or sky?
Grass.
Brick or stone?
Stone.
Astronaut or deep sea diver?
Deep sea diver.
Android or Apple?
Apple, baby. I wish I had an Android just for taking pictures.
I've never even all I have is Apple, and all my friends and like family have Apple, so I've never seen the Android photos.
See, and when you have an Android friend and they're like, hold on, let me take a picture, and they've got like a little clicker and it's the most beautiful. That's the only thing. I mean, like, night pictures far away, it's unbelievable. Go ahead.
All right, but give it a choice. You're going Apple.
All day. Yeah.
All right. East Coast, West Coast.
East Coast.
East Coast. All right. And the last one, beach or mountain?
Oh, my gosh. That's a tough one. Can I have the beach in the mountains like Michigan?
No. You have to. I'm going to make you choose one.
Mountain.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. Tiffany, thank you so much. I enjoyed this conversation. I loved hearing about your background, what you guys are doing with your business. It is wonderful. Congratulations on everything that you've accomplished and I'm sure will continue to accomplish.
I appreciate it very much. And I appreciate you helping spread the word and you keep doing what you're doing and get the integration.
Yeah.
Why can't I
can't. now my mind's slow. Integration.
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 Thank you, Lauren. This has been so great. I appreciate it. I can't wait to see the or hear the outcome.
Absolutely. This is the Lauren Asghari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And we will see you next time.
Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd Her Career Get There?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.